If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
And we are extremely honored to welcome neurosurgeon Dr. Eben Alexander as our guest on this episode.
Dr. Alexander is the author of several books stemming from his own miraculous near-death experience, including the number one New York Times bestseller, Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife. Doctor, we thank you so very much for joining us.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here, Laura and Jan. Thank you so much for having me on.
You have said that in some ways you experienced the perfect storm of near-death experiences. Tell us about that.
Well, I think it's important to point out that certainly as a neuroscientist and from a scientific perspective, my case brings a tremendous amount to the table. And that really came to the fore not only with my reviewing the medical records and putting them out there in the booklet of, Proof of Heaven, but also a recent case report on my medical records that came out in the Journal of Nervous and Mental Diseases in September of 2018. And that was written by three physicians who were astonished by my recovery, which really has no explanation in Western medicine. And that's why they reviewed the medical records. In fact, when the peer reviewers of that medical journal asked them, well, how do you explain this miraculous recovery? They basically said, based on their own experience, that there were other cases of profound, inexplicable healing after a near-death experience where people had tremendous physical healing from whatever ailed them. And that's, I think, why it is such a gift. I mean, there's so many other cases that have had near-death experiences, but without quite the same documentation of all the damage to the brain and the impossibility that brain could harbor any kind of dream or hallucination or confabulation. And that really was the evidence they had in my case. And this is something I surmised early on. And, that's why it's such a shocker, because it just step by step is very hard to refute with the typical, pseudo-explanations that come out of medical science, trying to refute such cases and just pretend that they're vast hallucinations. The hard evidence in my case makes it very difficult to make those kind of claims. And I think that's why it's so valuable to the scientific community.
What exactly happened to you on November 10th, 2008, for people who aren't familiar with your story? Because it's insane.
Well, looking back on it, it actually was a tremendous gift. I mean, astonishing. But you're right. When I was going through it, it was absolutely insane and
terrifying,
and very, very frightening for my family. I think important to point out that before that time, I'd spent 54 years of my life honing a very kind of conventional scientific worldview. I was had been a professor of neurosurgery at Harvard Medical School and other institutions, thought I understood brain-mind consciousness. And that's when everything shifted. I woke up early the morning of November 10th, 2008 with horrific back pain, soon realized I had a terrible headache. And it was soon after that that I was having grand mal seizures that were unbreakable and was deep in coma. And that's when my family called the EMTs to come take me off to the emergency room. And very fortunate there that doctors took very good care of me, realized quickly I might have meningitis, did a lumbar puncture, out came thick white pus under pressure, and then they put me on three powerful intravenous antibiotics on a ventilator up on medical ICU, where I languished for the next 7 days. Now, languished is what my body was doing. That's not what my kind of spiritual essence and mind were doing. In fact, I was liberated from the shackles of the physical brain and body into this robust, ultra-real world. Began in what I call the earthworm's eye view, very primitive, coarse, unresponsive kind of subterranean realm, but I was rescued from that by a slowly spinning white light that came with a perfect musical melody and ushered me up into a brilliant ultra-real gateway valley that had many Earth-like features, like I was a speck of awareness on a butterfly wing. There was beautiful, lush plant life in this meadow down below, and thousands of beings were dancing in that meadow, all fueled because up above were these swooping orbs of angelic choirs that were emanating chants and anthems and hymns that just thundered through my awareness. There was a beautiful guardian angel there on the butterfly wing. Those who've read Proof of Heaven will remember her extreme importance in this whole journey, even though she was very mystifying to me in the weeks after my coma, trying to make sense of it all. But then months later, when I received a certain picture in the mail, I realized exactly who that beautiful girl on the butterfly wing was. Now, deep in the middle of the journey, her appearance to me was very comforting, and she gave me the message that I think was the fundamental message I was to bring back to this world. You were deeply loved and cherished forever. You have nothing to fear. You will be taken care of. This is a universal message for all of us. And it turns out that in my coma journey, that was just a stepping stone, because then those angelic choirs provided yet another musical portal to higher and higher levels, until all of four-dimensional space-time had collapsed down, the entire multiverse throughout all of eternity was there as this simple teaching tool. But I was in an ocean of pure love, of that God force that so many near-death experiencers going back thousands of years have described. And it's really that beautiful kind of spiritual home that attracts us so well in spite of our addictions to kind of materialist thinking in this life. It's amazing how many near-death experiences would prefer to stay in that realm. And yet, you know, I chose to come back out of love, and towards the end of my journey, when I could no longer conjure up journeys into those higher levels of the spiritual world, I chose to come back to this world because I witnessed six phases at the very end. And one of them was of my 10-year-old son, Bond. Important to point out that my entire near-death experience was in a condition of complete amnesia for the life of Eben Alexander. I didn't remember any words, language, knowledge of Earth or humans. I had a completely empty slate. And I believe in retrospect that that was very crucial for some of the lessons that I was to learn from this journey.
What was it like when you awakened and realized you'd had this experience? How did your mind process this and come to terms with what happened?
It's important to point out that amnesia was still very much alive when I came back to this world, so that when I first opened my eyes in the ICU room, still on the ventilator and just barely coming into wakefulness in this world, all I knew was where I'd just been. My memories of Eben Alexander's life and even my words and language had been dismantled, you know, at the very beginning of the journey. And so my mother, my sisters, my sons standing around the bedside, I had no idea who these beings were. That's how shocking this whole experience was. And of course, that was very frightening for them, because the doctors had said I went from a 10% chance of survival at the beginning of the week down to a 2% chance of survival with no chance of recovery. And that's why on that Sunday morning, day 7 of coma, they had recommended stopping the antibiotics. So yes, people were quite surprised when I came back to this world. But believe me, my brain was very savaged by the experience. And so when I first woke up, I was just a disaster, completely, befuddled. All I knew was where I'd been. And then slowly I put the pieces back together. In fact, my words and language returned very quickly, literally over hours and a day or two. Childhood memories came back over a few weeks. And then my entire lifetime of memories came back over about 2 months. And that included all my semantic knowledge of neuroscience and cosmology and physics, every bit of that. And so it was this insane kind of wrestling match, because when I first woke up from coma, I had none of that neuroscientific knowledge. So when I told my doctors about what I'd experienced, they would just pat me on the back and say, well, you were very, very sick. Your brain was soaking in pus. In fact, we have no idea how you're coming back to us now. And then over the next few weeks, I would go back for follow-up visits, talk it over with my doctors, look at my scans, CT, MR, all the lab results and neurologic exams, and it just didn't line up. I was reviewing the medical records of someone who would obviously go on to die. never recover from illness. And that, again, is why the scientific world takes this case so seriously, because you have to start with this miraculous recovery that really has no explanation in Western medicine.
We thank you for being part of our Nobody Told Me family of listeners. You know, since we started our Nobody Told Me podcast 6 years ago, our goal has always been to bring you information that may make your life easier, less stressful, and more relaxing.
That's why we're excited to tell you about the Women's Meditation Network, which creates and publishes guided meditations and music through their expanding network of podcasts.
The Women's Meditation Network has podcasts available at your fingertips to help you calm down, sleep better, and feel less stress. These podcasts are the tools you need when you need them to find your inner voice and get to know yourself better.
With the Women's Meditation Network, you can listen and enjoy the meditation experience easily, whether you're a novice or someone with a lot of meditation experience. I feel nourished by the words and music that weave together during these meditations.
And remember that meditation isn't perfect practice, and it doesn't have to be so serious all the time. I listen to the Women's Meditation Network podcasts before I go to sleep. I love the 20 to 30 minute sleep meditation for women, focusing on body healing and relaxation, forgiveness, and quieting the mind.
I've used the extended sleep meditation for women with music lasting for 3 hours. It eases you into sleep and helps you stay asleep. You may also want to try the daily 1 hour sleep sounds meditation for women, featuring sleep meditation music along with ambient and nature sounds and white noise.
Sometimes I like to hear a soothing voice before sleep, and sometimes I just want soft sounds, and the Women's Meditation Network offers it all.
When you wake up in the morning, start your day with the 5 to 10 minute guided morning meditation for women, featuring weekly themes like gratitude, stillness, and kindness.
And if you're facing times of intense anxiety and worry, check out the Meditation for Anxiety. It's easy to press play and listen to a variety of topics that may address just what you need when you need it, thanks to the huge library of past episodes.
So go follow the Women's Meditation Network now wherever you listen to podcasts and start listening for free today.
Just search the Women's Meditation Network on your favorite podcast app and follow, or visit womensmeditationnetwork.com.
You know, I've often wondered since I read the book, if you feel now like it was a blessing to wake up again, or if you were experiencing such bliss when you were there that, you know, you kind of wish you'd stayed. You've come back to so many people who've doubted you and doubted your experience. And I would just think that would seem like such negative energy when you experience such beauty in another place.
Well, again, the reality is the miracle of the recovery, and you just cannot deny that. Once people acknowledge the power of that recovery in the face of this illness that should have devastated me, then the rest of it starts to flow. And that's why I think that case report is so important. And anybody who wants to look at that case report can go to ebenalexander.com, look at my blog postings, and specifically look at the one from September of 2018 about a new scientific report that validates the medical facts of my case. Mm-hmm. And you'll see, you can, in the third paragraph there, you can link directly to that case report. But it really is astonishing. I think the other point to make here is I realized when I came back from this journey that reincarnation is absolutely real. And yet I'd never studied reincarnation as a scientist. I didn't realize that there's a huge scientific data for it. But in my mind, I knew that we go through many lifetimes, and that, you know, to accomplish our soul journey of becoming one with that divine force at the core of the universe takes many lifetimes. You can't do it in just one lifetime. And so, in other words, this issue of coming back is that all NDEers end up coming back, usually out of a sense of responsibility to those that they've left here. But some of the deeper journeys obviously show us that we come back again and again. That's part of the natural order. And for your listeners, I would steer them to uvadops.org. That's University of Virginia Division of Perceptual Studies.org. But you just need those letters, uvadops.org, and you'll find a tremendous wealth of information there. That's a scientific group that's worked out of University of Virginia for more than 6 decades, a tremendous amount of work supporting not just non-local consciousness, that is the reality of things like telepathy, precognition, psychokinesis, past life memories in children indicative of reincarnation. In fact, that group currently headed by Jim Tucker, originally by Dr. Ian Stevenson, has basically studied more than 2,500 cases of past life memories in children where the best explanation is of reincarnation. And, you know, people who haven't read that literature will say, that's crazy. Reincarnation can't be real. I don't remember past lives. And yet there's also a whole world of transpersonal psychology that has opened up over the last few decades, thanks to the work of brilliant clinical scientists like Dr. Michael Newton, Dr. Brian Weiss, and Dr. Stan Grof. And basically, they came to realize in doing psychological work with their patients that the best explanation and understanding of the challenges in a current lifetime has to do with realizing that souls have been here before. And this is a tremendous kind of bigger model of consciousness that's rising up in this world today, scientifically studied and very much supported, even at the far edges of things like quantum physics, which is the most proven field in the history of science, all of it pointing to the primacy of consciousness, that our brain doesn't create consciousness, but is simply a filter, a transceiver that allows primordial consciousness to manifest into this physical world through these physical bodies. But in many ways, we're all connected through that one mind. And that's an important thing to remember. And this is why the scientific evidence is so powerful that will change this world and reinforce this notion that we're all connected. We all depend on each other. Just like the life review in a near-death experience shows us that the boundaries of self in many ways are artificial, that we're all sharing the dream of the one mind. And that is where I think the modern science, and this is something that we discuss in great detail, not just in Proof of Heaven in my second book, The Map of Heaven, but especially with my life partner and co-author of the third book, Living in a Mindful Universe, we talk a lot about this entire scientific revolution that is well on its pathway towards changing this world. And it'll change it for the better because we've treated each other poorly by thinking that we're separate. That was a teaching of materialist science. Whereas, in fact, the more quantum-informed version of the science of consciousness shows that we're truly all connected. And just like in that life review, you experience it as the emotional impact of your actions on other people around you during your lifetime. You don't experience it from your perspective. That's a very interesting feature, which really shows us that the golden rule, treat others as you would like to be treated, is actually written into the very fabric of the universe.
You've said that what happened to you while you were in that coma is hands down the most important story you will ever tell. And I'm wondering if you feel it's especially important for you to share that story now when we're in the midst of a frightening pandemic and people have had to say goodbye to their dying loved ones from a distance.
Absolutely. And that, in fact, is why Karen Newell and I, my life partner and founder of Sacred Acoustics, which is a form of binaural beat brain entrainment for deep meditative states. That's why we've started an entire program that people can access at unitedinhopeandhealing.com. And that is to help people through this challenge of the COVID pandemic and a lot of what it is teaching us. It's the biggest challenge most of us have faced in our lifetimes. It's probably the biggest health challenge that the world has faced in more than a century. And I am very optimistic about where it's going to lead us. People tend to get very depressed and anxious about the destruction of our economy and that kind of thing, but you're exactly right. This is just the time to remind people of this bigger lesson. And that's why UnitedInHopeAndHealing.com is a project that involves every other Thursday webinars that Karen and I broadcast, often with special guests, to help people deal with this COVID pandemic and, in fact, come to ways of seeing the silver lining on that dark cloud, because I fully believe that this pandemic will help us to become much smarter, stronger, and more connected with each other in how we face future pandemics and other big challenges like climate change. This is a perfect time to waking up to this bigger role of our souls and not get lost in fear, especially fear that's falsely put out there by a materialist model, of separateness and a brain-creating consciousness that essentially was disproven more than 80 years ago. through the advent of quantum physics. So yes, you're right. It's a tremendous time to come to this awakening. In fact, I'm convinced that in many ways, this COVID pandemic is like a gift of desperation that is collective and that is part of our destiny. It's all meant to be here to help us grow into this higher soul and this grander awareness of our existence and of our power to influence our emerging reality. That's what this awakening is really all about.
Like my mom said, so many people are forced to say goodbye from a distance to their loved ones. And I've always really wondered, and hopefully you're the guy to answer this, could you feel the love and support from the people who were still on Earth and, you know, trying to let you know they cared about you and they loved you? And were you trying to give them comfort while you were on the other side?
Well, again, my amnesia kind of figures into that because the entire near-death experience journey I had was one where I really didn't remember my connections to Evan Alexander's life. And I go into, in the three books, I talk a lot about why that was, why in my mind I can make tremendous sense of it. But I think the more important part is what you were getting at earlier, and that is, it is tragic that so many souls today are having to die alone, but that is physically alone, even though, of course, we have our technical adjuncts like iPads and FaceTime and all that to connect people. It's nowhere near the same thing as being there to hold one's hand and to be with them physically. But the other side of the coin that I recognize very strongly from my journey and from talking, you know, with thousands of other people who have had similar near-death experiences, shared death experiences, etc., is I can promise you no one truly dies alone. Because as soon as you start to move from one foot in this world and have another foot in that other world, in that spiritual realm, you're starting to be surrounded by loved souls who have passed to the other side and other supporting souls and angels that are always there for us. And so no one truly dies alone, even though it is tragic that because it's tragic, I say, because of the people left behind. Mm-hmm. It's not tragic for the ones who depart this world because they very rapidly realize that they are surrounded by loving souls and are bathing in an ocean of pure love. That's what near-death experiencers have been telling us for thousands of years about how comforting and how much a home that spiritual realm is. But again, it's not a permanent home. It's only kind of that resting station between lives where we reunite with our higher soul, go through our life review, bathe in the loving light of that God force of pure healing, infinitely loving, unconditionally loving love, and then plan for those next incarnations, all in this process of evolving consciousness and growing more towards oneness with the divine. But it is tough on those left behind, especially who have to say goodbye to their parent or loved one in this tragic COVID pandemic without being there to hold their hand and to kiss them and be with them in those final moments. But I also promise you, we connect with them very strongly in that mental space. And in fact, often loved ones will do that on their way out. That's called a shared death experience, where when a loved one leaves this world, they can come right through a soul that is still left in a physical body here, and show them, take them along on the journey, even to the point of witnessing a full-blown life review of that departing soul. And then the bystander soul can come back to this world. So in other words, from that realm and from that perspective, there really are not the limitations of communication. And that's why you often hear about these shared death experiences, or even where people just know that their loved one has passed in the middle of the night or what have you. Because they feel them, they come through, and they know that they have a psychic connection, and it's not imaginary. That's the thing. There are so many stories out there, and if for people who want more proof of that, I would steer you to the book "Hello from Heaven" by Judy and Bill Guggenheim, good friends of ours. More than 3,000 cases of well-documented after communications, which is exactly the same concept. That from that spiritual realm, we don't have to be physically in contact to communicate.
I encountered a very similar situation to what you're describing when my father passed away. So I'm a total believer in that.
It's absolutely real. I hear these stories thousands of times in my journeys traveling and talking about this.
Do you feel that you were specifically chosen to have this experience, to beat the odds and to be able to share the experience in a way that those of us who aren't neurosurgeons could never do?
No, I think near-death experiences are always tailored to the individual. And, you know, I was a neurosurgeon. I was fascinated by consciousness and physics and the nature of reality. So from my point of view, this was simply the journey that my soul was to go through. And it just so happens that occasionally, you know, one's individual lessons happen to parallel some of the deep societal and cultural lessons that are important in that time epoch. And so I would say that it just so happens that it was important that I was a neurosurgeon to understand this. If I had been a truck driver and didn't know the relevant neuroanatomy, I could have come back for this profound experience, tried to explain it to my doctors. They would have told me, oh, the dying brain plays all kinds of tricks. And I would have been tempted to let it go. But by knowing enough to review my medical records, talk it over with my doctors, go through all those neurologic exams that show my Glasgow coma scale, which for you or me right now would be a 15. For a corpse, that scale would be 3. Anything below 9 is deep coma. And as that case report on my medical records points out, once I had gotten to the ER, from that point forward, my Glasgow coma scale was between 6 and 7, sometimes probably as low as 5. And that was, and especially given the CT and MRI data showing all 8 lobes of my brain impacted by this, there's no way you could just postulate, you know, some kind of conscious experience. But it took having neuroscientific knowledge to review those medical records to realize that the experience that I subjectively witnessed could not be possible, given all of the tenets of our modern neuroscientific thinking about the role of the neocortex in constructing detailed conscious awareness. So, no, I wasn't chosen, but it's, you know, it just so happens to be a lucky fact that I understood the neuroscience enough to realize, no, this is not, this doesn't fit into anything that our, you know, modern neuroscience would claim is possible. And that's why that case report is so important, because the only way they could even explain it was to say that the spiritual power NDE played a crucial role in helping me to survive this and come back to this world and then recover fully.
I know, like you said, you had an amnesia of sorts up there where you didn't know people, but what's so crazy, and a moment in the book that really gave me goosebumps, was your guide in heaven was your birth sister, Betsy, who you didn't even know existed before your near-death experience. How did you learn it was her afterwards, and what did that make you feel?
That was the really the biggest, most heart-pounding, spine-tingling shock I've gotten in this entire existence as Evan Alexander. That was a real shocker. And, of course, that's how it's a spoiler alert here for people who haven't read Proof of Heaven, because that's really how that book comes together in the end. But, you know, I had spent the 4 months after my coma really deeply mystified by this. I knew if I had scripted the whole thing, because after I wrote down all my memories of my experience, which is roughly 20,000 words, it took me about 6 weeks to write all that. That's when I dove deeply into the near-death experience literature. And I was shocked at all the similarities between my journey and so many others. To me, it's crystal clear that they're referring to very similar journeys and realms. I mean, this is not just chaotic, hallucinatory imagination. There's a lot more to this. And so I was very mystified. In many ways, I felt so cheated, because all I read about NDEs was confirming the reality of my own. And yet, if I'd scripted it, my father would have been the spiritual guide and not some beautiful angel woman who, in fact, I came to realize after all my NDE reading, had to be somebody important to me in my life. And I knew I remembered her so perfectly. She had come into my mind, her very awareness. So it's almost like we became one soul in our empathic and emotional understanding of reality. And yet I didn't know who she was from the life of Evan Alexander. And that's why it was so shocking. And I tell the whole story in Proof of Heaven, but it has to do with the fact that I was adopted. I'd been put up for adoption when I was 11 days old. I couldn't have been more fortunate. I was adopted into a loving family, honored all my hopes and dreams. My neurosurgical father, who was my mentor and role model, And yet, like many adoptees, I reached out to the children's home looking for that birth mother and always getting the same answer. She's not looking for you, so forget about it. And so I did forget about it until 2000. That's when I was doing, when my son, Evan the Fourth, was doing a family project in sixth grade, and he needed more data on our birth family. So he encouraged me to write another letter to the children's home, which I did. And that's when I got the answer back that my birth parents had got married. I found that out in February 2000. That was a giant shock. I never thought they'd gotten married. And not only that, they had three children. So I had a real biological family out there I'd never known about. But because my youngest sister had passed 2 years earlier, they were still grieving her loss. And the way the social worker interpreted for me, it was that it was not a good time to come back in their lives. And so that perceived rejection from my birth mother in February 2000 led me into a dark night of the soul. I actually stopped taking my sons to church. I stopped saying prayers with them at night. And I didn't realize it till much later, but I ended up going into 8 years of a dark night of the soul, a very powerful agnosticism. Whereas before in my life, I tried to believe in a loving personal God and power of prayer. But then, of course, a year before my coma is when I met my birth family. And that story is fully told in Proof of Heaven. And then, of course, all that really had to happen in retrospect for this extraordinary journey to unfold in which she was actually my guardian angel. But it's a fascinating story of love and connection. It points out the tremendous soul connection we have, not just with our hereditary family, but also with our, the people that we live with and grow up with, because my adoptive family is easily as important, if not much more so, in my journey. But the birth family played an absolutely crucial in the kind of understanding of that beautiful guardian angel that I first encountered during my near-death experience.
Doctor, you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me, and we always ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? So what is it that you had to learn the hard way or were surprised about in this entire journey of yours?
I would say no one told me that consciousness is fundamental. And not only that, no one told me that truly at the fundamental level of the fabric of the universe, we are all connected through this indescribably strong force of love. That is at the basis of all understanding of this universe. And that I'm most grateful for this lesson. To bring it back to this world, because not only has it healed my soul in so many ways and connected me with the world, with God, and with all other sentient beings in our journey together, but in so many ways it has kind of laid out the rest of my kind of pathway in this lifetime, even though I don't claim to be at any final understanding of my life and what purpose it is to serve. I feel like I've made tremendous progress in the last decade since my NDE in making sense of this. And if I can do nothing else in my life but convey that important lesson of what nobody told me before, it would be to do exactly that, that mm-hmm. we are truly sharing one mind. It's in many ways a heart consciousness, and that the most important ingredient in how we choose to deal with ourselves and to deal with others' souls, other people, other animals, and everything that we deal with in this world is through love, kindness, compassion, acceptance, and mercy. And when necessary, forgiveness. This is all part of one gigantic lesson, which is what I learned and try to convey in Proof of Heaven, the Map of Heaven, and especially in living in a mindful universe where it all starts to come together, where the scientific evidence supporting all this is very strong, and we start to realize this is the new worldview. In many ways, it's a worldview that's been with us for thousands of years because some spiritual traditions were all over this notion of oneness and love going way back. And yet it's time for our culture to bring this lesson to the fore, because it's the most important lesson of our time and of our nature as human beings, is to recover this beautiful sense of connectedness and love, and that we're here to take care of each other.
Oh my gosh, that's so beautiful. Oh, really, everything that you say is so filled with hope. And I don't know, it's just your work is very feel good for me. And I'm so appreciative of you for writing it. How can people connect with you and find out what you have going on and learn more about the books?
Well, several ways. EbenAlexander.com, that's EbenAlexander.com. There's a tremendous amount of information there about the books, including all the scientific endorsements for those books. The blog postings tell a tremendous story about this evolving worldview. For those who are interested in meditation, I meditate an hour or two a day. I use sacred acoustics. That's a form of very powerful binaural beat brainwave entrainment. The sounds there, to cut to the chase, go right at the lower brain stem. They go after circuits that are hundreds of millions of years old, as opposed to most of what we listen to, which is modulated in the acoustic cortex and recently evolved circuits. But to learn more, go to sacredacoustics.com. Also go to unitedinhopeandhealing.com, sign up for the webinars, the free webinars that Karen and I are putting out to the world, especially in this viral pandemic that we're all facing up to because of the kind of challenges and anxiety and economic uncertainties in life. We're trying to help strengthen people. That's where I would highly encourage people to join up with unitedinhopeandhealing.com.
All right. Well, Doctor, we thank you so very, very much for sharing this experience with us. We can't thank you enough.
Well, thank you both for having me on. It's been a joy talking with you, and maybe we can do it again someday. So thanks.
We would
so
love
much.
To. Absolutely. That would be a dream.
We have so many more questions.
Well, good. Well, we could do it again. Just stay in touch.
We will.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
We will. Our deepest thanks to Dr. Eben Alexander, author of several books, including his first book, the international bestseller, Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife. And again, his website is ebenalexander.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.